rabbinical writings, tradition, it says, and that just the writings of rabbi, Jewish rabbis, that were collected. And it says that they keep record of her fairness, her openness, and her refusal to show partiality. And so it's no wonder that the people loved her. Like, she was very well respected. That's clear from these chapters. But people loved her. There's no record at all of anyone ever trying to depose her at all. No one tried to remove her from her high position. There's nothing in these chapters. And so far as I know, there's nothing in any other place in the Bible. Like, sometimes in Psalms or in Proverbs, there'll be like a verse or two relating back to the times of the judges or something, and will say something. But so far as I know, there's nothing in there that ever shows anyone saying anything negative about Deborah. There's no extra biblical material about that. She's generally viewed as someone who is well respected and loved by all the people. In fact, when we get into Judges, and we read some of the things that we saw last week, you might remember it. Verse 4, now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was judging Israel at that time. Meaning that she didn't just become a judge right here. She was a judge at that time. What time? The time of this oppression. Remember, this oppression has been going on for 20 years. And she was judging at that time. But it goes on to say that she used to sit under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the people of Israel came up to her for judgment. And so just think about that. There was a particular place where she would sit and people would come. It was a centralized place where everyone could get to. But it became known as the palm of Deborah. And whether that was true when she actually lived or whether it was named that later, sometimes that's the case in different spots, even the names of cities, things like that. But one way or the other, you know, that showed great respect. Like, there was a spot and everybody knew, oh, this is the palm of Deborah. It'd be today like having a statue put in front of a stadium for you, that sort of thing. It was a great tribute. Everybody knew that was the place. And so all these things, you just see that she was a well-respected woman. And so that's who she was. Now, as we saw last week, looking down at some of this, if you weren't here last week, I know we had kind of a small crowd. Kind of, that might be the way it is going forward right now. We're kind of, now this looks a little better than last week, I think. So. But anyway, it says at verse 6, she sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinam from Kedesh Naphtali, and said to him, has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you? Go gather your men at Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun. And that kind of tells us which portion of Israel all of this is happening. With all of the judges, a lot of times they took place in different parts of Israel. This would be up north, of course. And so that kind of plays a part a little bit later on. But you notice that she gets this word, and then she gives it to Barak, says, has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you, go gather your men at Mount Tabor? So here is a man who is, he's like a general, he's the commander. Remember, military people had a lot of power and clout, particularly at a time with no king. And yet, what does he do when Deborah summons him? Does he hesitate? Does it appear to you as you read this that she have to keep sending people, hey, come on, come on, come on? No, he comes right away. Because it's clear, as we saw some of these verses going forward, that he had himself had a great respect for Deborah. And so she gets a word from the Lord and sends forth this summons, And right away, he comes. And it goes on to say at verse 8, Barak said to her, if you will go with me, I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go. So we're not getting into all of that again. But remember last week we said there's a couple ways you can take that. And I'm in the camp. I take it positively that basically he is just showing respect for Deborah. Maybe he didn't do everything just right there or whatever. But one thing, you can't take too harsh of a view on him, because at the end of the day, Barak is in Hebrews chapter 11. So I've read everything from, well, he was just a wimp and, you know, he lacked faith. And how in the world did he make it into Hebrews chapter 11, the hall of fame of the faithful? He was clearly a man who had great faith in God. And what he was doing here, again, this shows respect for her. Like he really wanted, if he was going to go to war, and don't forget, they're going up against a massive army that has 900 iron chariots. And that was kind of new. Like you're entering into an age where, you know, the Iron Age, you had people had these kind of things. To us, I said last week, it'd be like having a tank. And that's right. And they also had, we don't know how many, so far as I know, we don't know how many foot soldiers they had, but they certainly had some. Someone said they had 100,000 foot soldiers, but I couldn't find that anywhere. If you can find a reference to that that I'm overlooking, let me know. That'd be helpful for me going forward. But whatever, it doesn't really matter. But certainly no army is consisted just of chariots. So they had foot soldiers. So you have 900 iron chariots and a certain amount of foot soldiers. And Barak is going up against that. And so you can see him wanting to have someone who is wise and discerning to be with the troops, to be able to give advice, to give some judgment if that's called for. There ain't anything wrong with that at all. That's a smart thing on his part. Now, whether or not we have no idea, whether or not if she decided not to go, if he would eventually go, again, with him being in Hebrews chapter 11 and being a man of faith, you would think that ultimately he would do what God wanted him to do. But the attitude he has simply is, Deborah, we need you. I'll go if you go. Because he knew she would be of great help. And the point I made in passing last week is that something, the application we can make of that is, this again shows the worth and the value of women, particularly the women in our lives. Like you, husband, listen to your wife. Listen to her advice. Listen to her wisdom. Like it is foolish for a husband to say, well, I'm the head. I'm the boss. I make the decisions and I don't have to. That's just a foolish position. You're robbing yourself of a resource that can make your life easier. And I've said that I know I'm not supposed to say much about Janice. I'll take my licks when I get home. But she's been a great help for me over the years. She's kept me out of a lot of trouble, really. There was, in fact, just not too long ago, I was going to write an article. She told me, yeah, I wouldn't. Like, you know, I get in moods, too, sometimes. And sometimes I think, like, I'm going to preach on something or write something and she might, that's might not be a good idea. How would I be saying, I'm the head. I'll make these. I'm the preacher. I'll make the decision to do. I'll write whatever I want to. Well, no. You got to be smart about things. Use your resources. And Barak, that's all he was. He knew that this woman could be of great help. She wouldn't actually be involved in the fighting, though some people think she was. I don't think that can be sustained at all from the text. But she went up to the place where they were going to fight. And that's what would often happen. Sometimes even kings, they would go to the battle. And then the soldiers would actually engage in the battle. And they would be a little off. But just their presence would be comforting to the troops. The king is here. They didn't have kings in the day of Judges, but they did have Deborah. And Barak wanted her, this woman who was well-respected, well-known, to be with them. And, of course, she agreed to do that. And so she said, I will go. And she said, but she said, I'll surely go. Nevertheless, the road to which you are going will not lead to your glory, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman. Now, again, you could take that as her saying, well, you're going to be punished for this attitude. And there might well have been some of that. I don't know. But let's not forget, basically, she's a prophetess. She's just saying this is the way it's going to be. She's just revealing that this is how it is, and that's the way it was. The glory was going to go to a woman, but it wasn't Deborah. He probably thought she was speaking of herself, but we find later that she wasn't. And so, anyway, as you go forward in the text, it says, then Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kedesh. And Barak called out Zebulun and Naphtali to Kedesh. And 10,000 men went up with his hills, and Deborah went with them. And then I think we talked last week about Heber, may have been right about where we left off, was right in there. But anyway, remember, he is a traitor. Because it says, and Heber the Kenite had separated from the Kenites, the descendants of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses. And when you go back to Judges chapter 1, you find that the Kenites had a friendly relationship with the Israelites. But now this family separated themselves from the rest of the Kenites. And that probably explains, at verse 12, it says, and Sisera was told that Barak, the son of Abinoam, had gone up to Mount Tabor. Who told him that? Well, we're not told who told him, but it is not really a necessary inference, but as close to that as you can get, that it was probably Heber that told him. And so now all of a sudden, Sisera has a heads up. And so he gathers his men then. That's when he gathers his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all of them went to the men who were with him. And so, you know, he goes, yeah, we know their plans now. We're going to go meet them in this battle. See? And so that's what he does. Full of confidence. And wouldn't you be with 900 iron chariots on your side? You'd probably feel pretty good about your situation. And they did. But listen to Deborah at verse 14. Deborah said to Barak, for this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Does not the Lord go out before you? What is Deborah showing there? Great deal of faith in God. God told her. We read earlier what the message she was to give to Barak. And now she has complete confidence. She probably can't reason it out. I don't know how in the world these Israelites are going to overcome and destroy this great army of Jabin's, how that's going to work. But she believed completely and totally that Barak would overcome Sisera at this time. That's the faith that she had. And so she says, just get up and go. God has given you the victory. And then, of course, it says, and the Lord routed Sisera and all the chariots and all of his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot. So they gained the victory. But it wasn't Barak. Well, it wasn't even Deborah. It was the Lord that gained the victory. Now what happened was God caused it to rain. Now at this particular time in the year, whenever they would go to war, that part of the world, it was all very strategic. They would make sure that it was summer and that the ground was hard. And because what were they on? Most of the men, chariots. So at that part of the world, the ground, it would get hot. That ground would get hard. It'd be like pavement. And so you could really go with those chariots. And they made sure that's when they were going to fight the war. That's when the campaign would set off at that time of year. because else they would be in trouble. And so here they are, and they get into this battle, and all of a sudden it starts to rain. And I mean, it rains hard. So in a very short period of time, now all of a sudden, instead of having the hard ground, it turns into mud. What are you going to do with that when you're on a chariot? You're going to be in a mess, aren't you? And now, so now the Canaanites, they're all freaking out because here they are. Everything has turned. They purposely fought this campaign at a particular time, and now it rains. And remember what God they were serving? Baal. And if you remember from other studies, he's the God of a number of things, but one thing he's the God of is rain. So now all of a sudden the God that they're serving has caused it to rain right in the midst of their battle. And they're thinking, our God has turned on us. And their chariots are in a mess now. And they get off and even their general gets off and runs on foot. And the Israelites, all they really have to do is mop up the situation and go after them, and they destroy them rather easily. But really, it's God behind it all. When we get to chapter 5, one of the things that she sang about at chapter 5 at verse 4, it says, "The Lord, when you went out from Seir, when you marched from the region of Edom, the earth trembled and the heavens dropped." Yes, the clouds dropped water. That's exactly what that's talking about. Like, it didn't sprinkle. When you think of the clouds dropping water, what do you think of? That is a lot of rain coming. That's a storm. It just ruined the army of Sisera. And so the Israelites won this battle. That's how they overcame 900 chariots and however many foot soldiers they had. They gained the victory. And verse 17 says, "And Sisera fled away on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber, the Kenite. For there was peace between Jabin, the king of Hazar, and the house of Heber, the Kenite." And so you notice how that reads. Sisera fled away on foot to the tent of Jael. He knew where he was going. He fled to her tent. And so as we think about that, this now, Jael is another, really, we don't know much about her, but she's another powerful woman. Very smart. And she, when you look at this, she kind of knew what was going on in this situation. And she made the right decisions in every way. First of all, she invites him. It says, "And Jael came out to meet Sisera and said to him, 'Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me. Do not be afraid.'" So she, now remember, her husband, Heber, he kind of sided with the Canaanites. They had moved away from the rest of the Kenites to a particular area north of that area where this family resided. She probably didn't have much choice in all of that. Like, when her husband decides to separate himself and move, what is she going to do? She's going to go. But we see now her heart wasn't in it at all. See, by what she does here in this scene. I got thinking about that a little bit. I've talked with others about, you know, a lot of times people will leave the faith. Men, preachers, will leave the faith. And I often think, what about their wives? What do their wives do? And in every case, I know their wives go with them. And, you know, I think, now, I don't know any of those situations. It could be the wife was the one who instigated the thing. And the husband went along, even if the preacher went along with that. Or it could have been they put their heads together and decided together that they were going to do this. Or this was now wrong about the church or this or whatever, whatever. Maybe they together did that. But I often wonder, and I know of some cases where I think to myself a lot,
I wonder if the wife's heart was in on this. But they go. And this is a story where we see Jael, she was forced to move, but her heart didn't have to be in on it. And clearly it wasn't. So she invites this. She knows someone says that he's come. And so she goes out to meet Sisera and invites him into her tent. And they, again, there's familiarity with each other. He's fleeing to her tent. And by the way, the tents were made at that time. The women did most of the work with the tents, even the erecting of the tents and all of that, even the carrying of the tents from place to place. Women did that. The men just, you know, sat, I don't know what they did. Matter sat around and drank Turkish tea or whatever. And they, but that's what the women would do most of the work. And so he fled. He knew where her tent was. And he's fleeing there. He's thinking maybe he can get a little rest there. And she invites him in. And so it says, turn aside, my Lord. Turn aside to me. Do not be afraid. So he turned aside to her into the tent, and she covered him with, the ESV says, with a rug, a blanket. Some say a mantle, but a heavy, heavy blanket. And she knows just what she's doing in this situation. Like, this woman is smart. So she knows, everybody knows what's going on at this time, that Jabin and his army led by Sisera are going to war with the Israelites. All these people know that. And all of a sudden, here comes Sisera, and he's running on foot. She knows, you lost. You lost the battle. And so now she invites him in, and she's certainly smart enough to know, I want to be on the winning side of all of this. So invites him in, gives him a blanket to put on. He asks for a drink. Please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty. And she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him. He wanted thirsty. His throat is probably as dry as can be. He's just been in a battle. He was at war. And then now he has run for however long the distance was, been running for his life. He's thirsty. He's tired. He wants some water. She gives him some milk. It wouldn't be, you know, like the milk you run down here and get at Giant Eagle. It'd be a cottage cheese, just kind of like a, you know, a thick thing. It's called a curd, I think, in chapter 5. But you put a heavy blanket on him. He's worn out from battle. Then you give him some milk. What's going to be the result? He'll be out like a light before you know it. And, I mean, even today, people drink warm milk to help them sleep. But you imagine if you are exhausted from being at war, fighting, battling, and then you had to run for your life on foot, all of that. And so she gives it to him. And then he has one last message for her. He says, stand at the opening of the tent. And if any man comes and asks you, is anyone here? Say no. So he's given her commands and wants her to lie for him. And again, this is he is the general. And so they, you know, he expects people to do what he says. And so it says, but Jael, the wife of Heber, took a tent peg and took a hammer in her hand. Then she went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast asleep from weariness. And then it says, and I believe totally in the inspiration of every word in the Bible. But then it says, so he died. Was that necessary to state? I mean, you can imagine she knew all about tent pegs because she's the one who put up the tent. That's what the women did. She went and got that peg and she nailed him right from the temple into the ground. And so he died. And basically, there was the victory. And you have Barak coming along. He, of course, he's the leader. He's after him. But as we read on, it says, and behold, Barak was pursuing Sisera, and Jael went out to meet him and said to him, come and I will show you the man whom you are seeking. So he went into her tent, and there lay Sisera dead with the tent peg in his temple. And so then, of course, verse 23, so on that day, God subdued Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the people of Israel, and the hand of the people of Israel pressed harder and harder against Jabin, the king of Canaan, until they destroyed Jabin, king of Canaan. So they took care of the general, and then they killed the king himself. And so the oppression is brought to an end. Now, as we go into chapter 5 very quickly, this just kind of repeats what happened. But there's a couple of things that I would point out in chapter from this song. You can go back and study chapter 5 yourself. Just read through it. But there's a few highlights in here. One, I made mention in passing that I am impressed with regard to Deborah. When you read down to verse 7, first of all, it gives us a description of what it was like in Israel before Deborah rose up. It says, in the days of Shamgar, son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were abandoned. The travelers kept to the byways. The villagers ceased in Israel. They ceased to be until I arose. I, Deborah, arose as a mother in Israel. So everybody was terrified. They weren't walking the streets or anything like that. If they had places like a countryside, they had to go inside the city and kind of lock themselves up. They were basically, if they went anywhere, it was in the byways, they had to sneak around. They were being oppressed by their enemies. That was the situation. But did you notice how she described herself? I, Deborah, arose as a mother in Israel. Now notice, it didn't say she arose as the mother of Israel. Some translations may say that, but that's wrong. That's not what she said. It doesn't even say that I arose as a mother of Israel. It just says, I arose a mother in Israel. In other words, out of all that she was, and she was an impressive woman, she didn't identify herself simply with being a judge, being a prophetess, being a leader of men. That's exactly what she was. A poet, we find. She wrote this song. She didn't identify with any of that. She identified with herself as a mother. And it is a wonderful message for women everywhere. Like the most important thing you do, if you are a woman, at the top of the list of the important things that you do, you may do a whole lot of things in life and do a whole lot of great things. Even from a secular standpoint, you might rise to a high position in business. Maybe you're a great help in the community. Maybe you're a school teacher or a principal and you help kids. Whatever it is you do, it's all secondary to being a mother. If you are a mother, that's the most important thing. Outside of being a Christian and a wife, right up there at the top is being a mother. And that's devalued by most people in our society today. The best thing you can do as you rear children and is teach those children about God and how to be good Christians and be a good example to them, there isn't anything more significant than that. And here's a woman who had all kind of clout and power and authority, and yet she identified with being a mother. That's pretty impressive to me. And then a second thing, we just have a couple of minutes here, but you notice, why did they get themselves in this mess and this oppression in the first place? Verse 8 tells us, it says, and when new gods were chosen, then war was in the gates. Was shield or spear to be seen among the 40,000 in Israel? They're being oppressed. They don't have proper weapons even to fight. But why? Because new gods arose. They turned their back on God and they got themselves in a mess. And throughout the book of Judges, we see that over and over again. They're just fine as long as they do what's right. But they never did that very long. Whenever they turned back to other gods and introduced new gods, they were oppressed once again. And that's what happens. And when we walk away from God and we don't put Him first, it leads to the same thing. It will lead to our life being chaotic and confused and just a mess. We need to learn to put God before everybody else. Then there's one more thing, and I don't know if I'll have time to get to it. It really involves several of the verses in Judges, so you have to read it for yourself. But what you have in most of the rest of chapter 5, basically, is a hall of fame and a hall of shame. The hall of fame are made up of all the people that were willing to participate in this battle. And in this song, Deborah praises them. And my heart goes out, verse 9 says, to the commanders of Israel who offered themselves willingly among the people. Bless the Lord. And you see of that at verse 14, from Ephraim, their route, they marched down in the valley, following you, Benjamin, your kinsmen. From Maker marched down the commanders. From Zebulun, those who bear the lieutenant staff, and so on. Issachar got involved. Ephraim was involved. And so these are the tribes that actually participated in this battle. From chapter 4, all we heard of was Zebulun and Naphtali. But now we see a few others were involved. But there were some who wouldn't. And listen to what Deborah says about them. At verse 15... It says, the end of verse 15, it says, among the clans of Reuben, there was great searching of heart. Why did you sit still among the sheepfolds to hear the whistling for the flocks? Among the clans of Reuben, there was great searching of heart. The tribe of Reuben didn't participate in the fight. All they did was think about it. Great searching of heart. Should we do this thing? Should we get involved in this battle? You know, they have 900 chariots over there. It could be a dangerous proposition. And they're while they're just thinking about fighting and thinking about participating, why they should or why they shouldn't, the battle passed them by. And they didn't participate. And very quickly, there are others. It's almost humorous to read some of this as you go on. It says, at verse 17, Gilead stayed behind, beyond the Jordan. So their attitude, they didn't participate. Their attitude, that's not our responsibility. We're over here on this side of the Jordan. You all handle that. And then Dan, look at Dan. And Dan, why did you stay with the ships? Like, they just went sailing. Not really, but they just decided to, you know, they stay on their boats and let the war pass by. Asher sat still on the coast of the sea. What do you think comes to your mind there? They're just hanging out at the beach. And so you have all of these tribes doing nothing. And Deborah condemns them. Some of you just relaxing. Some of you saying, no, that's not our job. Some of you just thinking about the situation, being, you know, just think, well, should we or shouldn't we? And they didn't participate in the war. There's a great practical. We don't have time now. The time is over. There's a great practical lesson for us. How many of us are sitting back? We'd rather be involved in recreation, or we're just thinking, should I do that? Should I teach this class? Should I go participate? Should I come to all? And we're just thinking about it till the battle passes us by. Or we're just apathetic toward the whole thing. Let's make sure we get in the battle. We fight the good fight and participate so we can be praised by God. We'll pick up with something else next week.